You go into your shower feeling tired, but as soon as you reach for the Irish Spring, your day immediately gets better. That crisp, fresh, unmistakable Irish Spring scent zings your brain and awakens your senses. So when you finally emerge from the shower 37 minutes later because you pay the water bill so you can stay in there as long as you want, you're ready to take on the day and smell great doing it. Irish Spring Body Wash and Bar Soap. Fresh, green, Irish. Shop now at a store near you.
From their innovative practice facility to unmatched views from the fairway, the PGA of America is helping lower scores and elevate fan experiences with 5G solutions from T-Mobile for Business. Together, we're using AI-powered analytics to expand coaching tools and bringing fans closer to the pros with 5G-connected cameras. This is game-changing innovation. This is the PGA of America with T-Mobile for Business. Take your business further at T-Mobile.com/now.
If you own a vehicle with less than 200,000 miles and have an auto warranty about to expire or no warranty coverage at all, listen up. CarShield has a low-cost, month-to-month vehicle protection plan that covers more parts than ever. Visit carshield.com/audio to find out how you could pay almost nothing for covered auto repairs. Drivers who activate this vehicle protection today will also receive free roadside assistance, free towing, and car rental options at no additional cost. Get your free quote today at carshield.com/audio. That's carshield.com/audio.
The Around the NFL Podcast likes to pop their collar and rock a visor.
Never. From the Chris Wessling Podcast Studio, it's Around the NFL. I am Dan Hansis. Got just one hero with me today. It's Greg Rosenthal. Mark Sessler, under the weather. Hopefully back with us during the week. Greg never wore a visor under any circumstances, even in the darkest of my bro days. Never a visor.
I think I had a little Tulane visor that I would pop maybe when I'd go golfing in college at the city courses. That's about it, though.
This is the I want a photo of that. This is the Week 10 Double Digits flagship program, and you know, one theme that was starting to come together. I want to say narrative, but narrative has been turned into this pejorative, which I don't like. Because it's being abused, so why am I going away from it? Because then they win. But I'm going to stick with it and say a theme that had been coming together a little bit is the defenses having their way more often than not in 2023. This week was an exception. Eight teams, Greggy, today scored at least 29 points. 10 scored at least 27. We had a near 50 burger. We had multiple shootouts. Good stuff.
We had, for the first time ever, five game-winning field goals on the same day.
Whoa.
That's pretty crazy. It's a pretty crazy Sunday. We weren't necessarily expecting. There's some good matchups, but a lot of good game-winning field goals.
I clocked that there were a lot. In fact, at one point, we changed one of our highlights because it just seemed to me there was too many game-winning 31-yarders. But still, that tells you the quality of the games today. So we're going to go through them all with Nick Shook joining us a little bit later. Let us start where we must start, in Cincinnati, where the Cincinnati Bengals are looking to keep it rolling with Joe Burrow. But C.J. Stroud, he said, I'm the new guy around here. I'm the bad guy.
John Weeks will snap. Cameron Johnston will hold. 38-yard field goal attempt from the left hash mark for the victory for Matt Amendola. Here's the snap. Here's the spot. Here's the kick. Plenty of leg. And
there's one.
It's good. The Texans walk off with a win.
Yes.
In Cincinnati.
Oh, man.
They take it 30-27. Matt Amendola at the buzzer.
Yeah.
It happens every year. Around this time of year, too, I feel like, where the stakes start building. There will be the color guy in the booth who just gets so caught up in the moment, he is no longer a paid employee. He's just a dude yelling, yeah! Because he's happy the team he was rooting for was victorious. In this case, yes, the Texans, who get a 38-yarder from Matt Amendola at the gun to beat the Cincinnati Bengals 30-27. A game in which Greg, C.J. Stroud, I thought, outplayed Joe Burrow, which is very notable. And then you think about who Joe Burrow is, one of the greatest quarterbacks in the league. And Stroud now has kind of put a stamp on it, Greg, that he is the most exciting quarterback to enter the league since Burrow did a few years back. So this could be the first of many big time showdowns between these guys. And I hope they deliver as many classics as this.
And it's like the start of the Stroud MVP quote unquote conversation. It's we got 8 weeks here, but he's in the mix leading one of the best offenses in the league over the last couple of weeks. And to win this game coming off Cincinnati's 2 week run where everyone left it saying, wow, the Bengals, they might beat 5-3, but they also might be the best team in the NFL. And not just beating them, but beating them in a shootout and beating them in a game where they put up 544 yards, Dan. And at one point, like midway through the third quarter, we're tripling the Bengals in total yardage.
Yeah, they could not stop Stroud, and they could not stop the running game. Devin Singletary for the Texans. This has been a major issue for Houston all season long. They have not been able to move the ball on the ground. Not the case in this game. Singletary goes for 150 yards, averaging 5 yards a pop, and it felt that way. It felt like every time he touched the ball, it was 5 yards, 7 yards, 11 yards. So he has the big day. Noah Brown is, I don't know, he's unlocked something here with C.J. Stroud that was not going on with Dak Prescott in Dallas. 7 for 172. He had 150-plus last week as well. You have Tank Dell putting the roller skates on a cornerback and scoring a touchdown in this game. And the fact that they, and we'll get into like all the different, like how this game came down to the wire, but Houston also gave up the ball multiple times on the Cincinnati side of the field on turnovers. So that they really very rarely were stopped by Cincinnati's defense. Notably the exception being a pick six that Stroud throws, that was a stunner because at the time Cincinnati was down double digit points. There was, I believe, less than 4 minutes to play in the game. Burrow had just thrown his second interception of the second half, and the pick six by Stroud woke up the building. In fact, a lot of Cincinnati fans are streaming toward the exits, Greg, and they all pour back in.
And they went down at the one, so Mixon got the touchdown with 1 yard.
Oh, that's right. My fault. Yes, they get him. They take it all the way down, get the touchdown, force the punt, and the Cincinnati Bengals will have to, they'll rue the day. And so will I, because I locked them up, Greggy. And this is just one of those years. You know, sometimes you got to take the bad beats, because I will never feel bad about getting behind the Bengals at home with Joe Burrow playing at this level. He hits a go-ahead touchdown pass that's just dropped, a bad drop. They have to settle for a field goal. And
right,
then Stroud, Tyler Boyd drops a killer one, and then Stroud takes over and marches them right down the field for the winner.
I mean, this is the stuff legendary careers are made of, to have that touchdown drive with those throws with under 30 seconds left last week to Tank Dell. And then to be in a position where it's a 3rd and 6 at his own 29, he finds Schultz after buying some time. And then a 2nd and 6 at the Bengals 42 with 15 seconds left. That's it. And he gets it to Brown, who makes it was a terrific throw. And Brown makes an even better individual play to pick up a lot of yards after the catch, breaking tackles. That was a big play in the Bengals season because Trey Hendrickson was hurt on this play. We hope it's not a serious injury. And then you get the game-winning field goal after that. 17 explosive plays in this game for the Texans offense. It's a game that we shouldn't need it, but it's like it lets us think even differently about the Texans season, even than a week ago, even though last week kind of got us halfway there. This is another level because they lost about 7 starters to injuries last week, Dan. You know, Damian Pierce isn't in this game. Nico Collins isn't in this game. A bunch of players in the secondary aren't in this game. And then to win it with 17 explosives, that's the 4th most of any team in any game since 2000.
Whoa.
The Texans versus the... And that's against a good Bengals defense.
I mean, you want to talk about a team that is arriving ahead of schedule. That is Houston right now, and they are showing themselves to be a team that cannot be taken lightly. You do not lock against them, because they are a team they could absolutely make you look bad. And it should be also noted that this game started out to script with Burrow going right down the field, and he throws one of the prettiest balls you'll see all season. He throws it right on the money. The touchdown goes to Irwin right down the sideline, 32 yards. And he pulls out, Burrow, one of my favorite celebrations I've seen in some time. He pulls out the archery move. I think, oh, Burrow, the Archer. That's a great nickname, potentially. But then Houston's defense, with D'Amico Ryans leading the way there, of course, forces five consecutive punts and gets the game under control. So you saw the Stroud interception late that allowed Cincinnati back in the game. But not only was the offense something to really be excited about, Houston putting up 10 points in each of the last three quarters, the fact that their defense is making strides as well. I mean, look out.
They've won different types of games. I think of that Saints win where the offense actually didn't do much. They won it defensively. It's something special is brewing here. We'll get to the Jaguars later, but like that division seems much more open than we expected.
And then all of a sudden, Greggy, Cincinnati, they got the Ravens in Baltimore. And we're going to get to what happened to the Ravens today on Thursday night on a short week. And the Houston Texans get the Cards at home. So, like, interesting.
I would have happily locked this if I wasn't bullied over the last few weeks from our friend Nick Wesley into not taking like 6-point spread. So that helped me.
You know what? I'm going to try to get Nick on the show for the Thursday night football matchup there, too. So maybe you guys could work some things out. All right. So Houston was, listeners know, a finalist for the team of Around the NFL. Mm. The other finalist and the actual choice is the Minnesota Vikings. And here was their first game as the team of ATN hosting the Saints.
Dobbs out of the shotgun on third down. Cam Jordan got around the right tackle. Dobbs looks, sees nothing. Now he runs out to the left.
Dobbs
he
magic
to somebody. Turns to the five. Woo! To the end zone. Touchdown! Incredible! Josh Dobbs with a rushing touchdown has run Minnesota to a 16-3 lead.
Oh!
Yeah.
Josh Dobbs threw for a career-high 268 yards. He had two total touchdowns, including that beautiful scramble. The Vikings built a big halftime lead and then held on to beat the Saints 27-19. That is five straight wins for the team of ATN.
Whoa, is that right?
Five straight, right?
I don't know. They were 0-3. It's 5-6.
Yeah, I'm getting thumbs up from Roberts behind the glass. They were 0-3.
Yes.
And now they are comfortably, this is important. They're comfortably in the NFC playoff picture right now. So, Greg, the team of ATN keeps finding a way, and with it's Dobbs right in the middle of it all.
That run in for the touchdown was part of a first half that was magical. It was like they listened to our podcast during the week, and they said, Dan, Mark, and Greg believe in us. Hell, we believe in us. Josh Dobbs, I'm not just going to be like one of the best stories of the NFL. I'm watching that first half, and I'm just thinking, this is just one of the best quarterbacks in the NFL right now. The very first play from scrimmage, a dot, I think it was to Addison, a throw they would tell you not to make because it was so impossible. I'm sure the expected completion on that from Next Gen was like 10%, but he fits it in the smallest of windows, and I thought, ooh, this could be a pretty special game. A third and one where they run an RPO, something you wouldn't be able to do with Kirk Cousins, and then a fourth and seven, a third down breaking tackles before he threw the ball that to me was even more impressive than that rushing touchdown where he's just like guys are falling off of him and he's making these I don't even know who to compare him to exactly. Just imagine any great rushing quarterback where he just is impossible to get down, but he's still making terrific throws down the field. Like he added that all up. And they held on in the second half, but I don't care. You can't talk about the second half. They had 388 yards, 27 points, no turnovers. The offense did their job, and they showed they can win a different type of game with the way the defense closed it out.
Yeah, that was, you know, I was tracking other games at the time, but, you know, when you saw the halftime stats and you saw the highlights, you're thinking to yourself, like, what? Is this the story of the 2023 season? And perhaps it might. And it's almost like the football gods were like, let's tone it down in the second half here because we don't want to overplay our hand at this point. And that allowed the Saints to get back into the game, Greg. And the Saints are a team that seems to be always dealing with some level of drama. They lost their quarterback again.
Yeah, Derek Carr hurt his shoulders and they listed him as having
that plural
concussion.
Your both shoulders?
No, his shoulders.
Oh,
sorry. I meant to, like, it was multiple injuries. It was shoulder, and they tested him for concussion. I need to follow up on that. They believe, because Carr spoke after the game, which is usually a sign actually you pass the concussion part of that, but he took a brutal hit on his best play of the game, actually. He showed toughness on a great throw to Olave and then just got absolutely hammered. And he struggled before he left. He had a fumble. He held the ball. And then Jameis comes in and immediately goes like 3 for 3 and threw two of the most improbable touchdowns of the season. According to Next Gen Stats, actually, I think that was why it was in my mind, his throw to Olave was the least probable touchdown of the entire season. And I swear the other one where he threw it across his body to A.T. Perry, and it was just a BB, a better play by Jameis even than the Olave one, which was just an outstanding play by Olave and a good throw. Like, those were two of the best touchdowns of the season. But then reality
is always a but.
Yeah, the reality set in. He threw a couple interceptions, and he had three different chances to potentially have a game-tying drive in the fourth quarter, and all three times the Vikings defense stood up.
It's a shame, too, for the New Orleans offense, because it seemed like they were starting to find a groove there with Carr and Kamara and Taysom, with Olave waking up a little bit. But now, once again, Carr's, we don't know what his situation is. Also, Michael Thomas, it should be noted, he played in this game, left with an injury. It's not believed to be serious. It was a knee issue. But he was also arrested on Friday for an alleged confrontation with a construction worker near his home.
It was even in the police report, so I don't need to say reported, but according to the police report, Michael Thomas was upset someone he believed was recording him, like on their on his phone. It was like a contractor, construction worker next door, and he walked over and slapped the phone out of the guy's hand. I don't know what else exactly happened, but he played in this game, had an injury. They believe he'll be okay. They actually said they didn't think it was serious. They have a bye now, so I think there's some optimism. Carr and Thomas will return. And I do think it's important to note, like, Danielle Hunter had three quarterback hits in this game. He was leading the league in sacks. I didn't mention him on my defensive player of the year rank, you know, talk the other day, and he's in that mix too. And he was making a big play on one of those interceptions by Winston. He got pressure. And I think it's cool that, like, their defense really has played like a top 10 defense. It, to me, it's telling, like, this was a coaching win. You give KOC all this Saints talent on offense. And if you give Brian Flores maybe what the Saints defense has, I think it's like the Saints would then win this game. I really believe that the coaching in this game particularly makes that big of a difference. Dennis Allen's defense is not making a big difference.
Nice start for the team of ATN. And just a reminder that all this Dobbs excitement, the greatest wide receiver in the world is on the Vikings. He's been out for a month, but we could see him returning to the fray not too long from now. So that adds another layer to it. And that went into the thinking, at least for the old Zeuser, of why this is the team of ATN, because you get to root for a team that has Justin Jefferson. So there's that. And I want to give a little love to TJ Hockenson. This, according to the Elias Sports Bureau, Greggy, the second NFL tight end since 1978 to catch at least 10 passes for 100 yards and a touchdown in one half. And that's playing with a tear of cartilage in his rib area. Playing through pain, kept on getting whacked. That's a guy that you like to go to war with.
That's sort of what I'm talking about with KOC. It's like they started Brandon Powell. Addison, who was great, made another really good catch and almost a near touchdown. He always just, his hands are great. But they started Brandon Powell and Jalen Naylor at wide receiver. And they're still getting it done. And not really getting a running game other than Dobbs, but he ran for 44, which makes a big difference adding to that. That's what I mean. And yet they still find a way. You get Hockenson the ball. It's impressive. It's impressive. They're a game and a half up on that seven spot right now.
Like game
at this point, they're actually, I would say, considering their schedule and everything, it's weird to say this with Josh Dobbs, but at this point, I sort of think they're the heavy favorite to get a playoff spot at this point.
Imagine saying that or thinking that after week three when they were 0-3.
Give it to us.
We might give it to you. You deserve it. All right, let's head to the big shootout that went down across the sidewalk here in Inglewood.
Here we go. Final play of the game. Lions going for the win. 41-yard field goal attempt. Hash mark left side. McQuaid to snap. There it is. Fox the hole. Patterson the kick. It is up and it is good. He got it. That's a victory for the Lions on the final play of the game. And what a game it was. Back and forth they went. No separation between these two. And Lonnie Patterson sends it through to secure a 41-38 victory for the Lions.
Great call.
Great F yeah by Dan Campbell. Run into the middle of the field. That was great.
Deserving a bongo. Him. Man. Bite. Kneecaps. Save. Girl. Rum. Tongue. Yes, the field goal was good at the gun, lifting the Lions to a 41-38 win over the Chargers, who had a lot of pluck, a lot of fight, but they just could not find a way to stop the Detroit Lions. Nobody could stop anybody in this game, actually. One of those pure shootouts where defense is really just an idea rather than something that truly exists. And I want to call attention to, and I think we have sound for it, one of my favorite play calls of the entire year, and it was so on brand for Dan Campbell and the Lions, and yet it was still so impressive to see a team be so fearless and just believing in who they are. It's fourth and two for the Lions. They have the ball. They're already in field goal range here with 1:47 to play in the game. They're at the Chargers 26. I understand we're in the era now where coaches like to be aggressive, but when the rubber meets the road, there's not many coaches that are going to pass on a very makeable field goal this late in the game.
Mm-hmm.
But Campbell was smart. He said, first of all, I believe in my offense. Second of all, I know my defense is having a bad day. And when you factor those two things in, he said, let's go for it. And they passed the ball, Sam Laporta, 6-yard gain. And crucially, that means Justin Herbert, who is lights out with Keenan Allen in this game, does not see the field again. Otherwise, if you assume that they make the field goal instead there, you're giving Herbert about a minute and a half to do damage there and potentially steal the game. Here is Campbell on his decision-making there.
Going into that situation, you know, if you don't, there's going to be a lot of time left. You know, you kick field goal. You know, so I wanted to finish with the ball in our hands. I liked where we were at offensively. We're playing good. Golf was in a good spot. And I felt like that was the right thing to do.
He explains it, Greg, matter-of-factly, but that was extremely, you have to have like onions, like great big onions to make a decision like that in that game. And it seems like it wasn't even a hard choice for him. That's part of the reason everybody loves this guy.
I love him too. He's a great coach. And I think the contrast between him and Brandon Staley was so there tonight, because Brandon Staley came in, he's Mr. Fourth Down guy. And then Campbell hoists Staley on his own fourth down petard. You know,
my favorite Wessism of all time.
I don't think Staley would have been ready for that moment. The thing with the Lions is you can see with their situational football, it reminds me of the Patriots back in the day. I know I bring a lot back to the Patriots, but Campbell knew before that sequence what he was going to do in that scenario. Like, they get prepared. Brandon Staley, on the other hand, when there was a big fourth and one just the previous drive, burned a very valuable timeout to get everything together before they called what was ultimately an extremely effective fourth and one, ended up being a long touchdown. So you can't kill him. But I always see with the Lions that they're ready for these scenarios. They sort of have it gamed out. And, like, the game's not too fast for Dan Campbell in a way that I think it is for a lot of coaches, including Staley, who's a defensive coach ultimately. And I think this game, especially against another guy who's hired the same year in the contrast and giving up 8.3 yards per play and all these touchdowns, and on a day where the Chargers scored a touchdown on their last five drives, literally their last five drives. They are the first team, this is again, I think, from Josh Dubow, the Associated Press, to score a touchdown on all their drives in the last 40 minutes of the game and not win.
Unbelievable.
Actually, Herbert showed up in the biggest way possible, and Staley's defense just couldn't do literally a thing for him.
And it's funny because they started out, they go three and out, the Chargers, to start the game. They have a field goal drive, and then Herbert throws an interception. So it starts as a totally different game, but, you know, it turns into what we saw. And, yeah, I think it's – you could look at it two ways with the Lions, because this is a team that considers itself a true Super Bowl contender, and this was a pretty epic no-show by their defense to consider themselves as contenders, and you worry how this would look against a team like the Eagles, for instance, in the divisional round or something like that. Like, you have to have somebody that's going to show up. I don't think they had a sack in this game. They could not, as Greg pointed out, get any type of a spot. They had no answers or adjustments for Keenan Allen, who was just shredding them all night. 170 yards, what 75 yards on 11 Keenan catches. Allen.
Unreal.
And that's sandwiched around, by the way. He came out of the game briefly with a shoulder, went back in the game, came out again, and went into the locker room. And then every time he was back on the field, he was making huge plays. So, yeah, they finished the Chargers with 421 yards. But that almost doesn't tell the story, because down the stretch, they were as unstoppable as any team you'll see this year.
Well, also because of their defense, they only got 9 drives in the game, which is not a huge amount. So to put 38 points in 9 drives is wild. Then again, the Lions, you know, did 41 in 10 drives. It's just crazy. And I had... I wouldn't say a friend of the show. I'm not familiar with Mike B at Bolt Tweeter, but he asked me, he says, Greg, I need you to spend as much time as possible tearing Brandon Staley to shreds this week. Chargers fans are begging you. We need help. I don't think you need help. I think the way this team is going, that they just find different ways to lose. It's just like when the offense plays well, the defense doesn't, or vice versa. In the end of games, Herbert can play outstanding, and then they end up, like, I think it's gonna take care of it for you. Like, if this team doesn't make the playoffs, I don't think you need my help, and I just don't think they're gonna make the playoffs.
Yeah, I mean, you're right. It's there is that frustration.
You never know. Maybe Herbert just, like, is in FU mode the rest of the way. Like, this was a big game for him. Maybe he turns it on, but I sort of doubt it.
Oh, for sure. I mean, he's coming off a game against the Jets where he threw for 136 yards. Did not have a touchdown. Keenan Allen was all but erased in that game, with the exception of a big catch to help lock down that win on Monday night. So on a short week for them to show up and ball out the way they did. And I want to give a little, because we brought it up in the newsroom, Greg, give a little love also to Amon-Ra St. Brown, because he is, you know, I do the Superstar Club, and that seems ridiculous to even talk about it. Mm. But he is the first Lions player since Calvin Johnson to record 4 straight games of at least 100 yards. He ended with a career-best 156 on 8 receptions and a touch in this game. And he's just, I mean, what else can you ask for from a number one receiver? It's consistency. It's the production. It's in big moments. Goff, who also played very well in this game, has a real one there.
And it's also knowing he's the receiver, that he's going to end up, by the end of the season, I would guess maybe doubling the number two receiver, who's probably will be Sam Laporta on this team. So that's outrageous. But they are running the ball incredibly well. Having Montgomery back is huge. He ripped a long one, and Jahmyr Gibbs is making big plays. They run for 200 yards. They ran for 170 in the first half, which is just crazy. And you're right about the Lions in terms of contending. Like, who knows? But they are absolutely contending for the one seed, which seems weird to think about, but they're 7-2, which on its own is contending for the one seed. They do not play a team with the winning record until week 16. They finish at Minnesota, at Dallas, and then Minnesota again, which is a very interesting final 3 weeks. But their next 5 weeks are against teams 500 or worse. They're going to be favored in all those games. Even if they, you know, lose one of them, they are going to be in the mix for home field advantage.
And my last note is an apology to the Lions, who are hitting all the right buttons. And I'm not alone on this, was questioning why they blew up their backfield, because Jamal Williams set the touchdown record and DeAndre Swift was a really nice change of pace guy. But David Montgomery had a gorgeous 75-yard touchdown run in this game. He had 116 yards and 12 carries. Jahmyr Gibbs had another big game with 2 touchdowns. They are great. They are a great tandem. There are not a lot of holes with this team. Well, the defense has got to clean it up. But the offense, they can score on anybody. Let's take a break and then bring in the pipe.
You go into your shower feeling tired, but as soon as you reach for the Irish Spring, your day immediately gets better. That crisp, fresh, unmistakable Irish Spring scent zings your brain and awakens your senses. So when you finally emerge from the shower 37 minutes later, because you pay the water bill so you can stay in there as long as you want, you're ready to take on the day and smell great doing it. Irish Spring Body Wash and Bar Soap. Fresh, green, Irish. Shop now at a store near you.
What's up? I'm John Wall.
And I'm CJ Toledano, and we're starting a new podcast presented by DraftKings called Point Game. We're now joined by three-time NBA Sixth Man of the Year, elite bucket getter. Let's please welcome Jamal Crawford to Point Game. King of the Court one-on-one tournament. If they had it back in your prime, do you think he could have took it all?
I'm going to be honest with you. I don't think I could have took it all, but I think I would have shocked a lot of people. I think Kobe and everybody in their prime, Kobe would win a one-on-one contest.
Yeah, because you got to think, he's going to guard. He don't care about guarding.
He's going to guard.
He's going to guard. Like, you see him in the Olympics, he's going to guard. And then on top of that.
I'm not guarding like that, CJ.
Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Sam Cassell to Point Game.
I remember you came to my room crying tears. I mean, he was in a culture shock. And then he's going to withdraw us about winning.
Remember what I told you? I said, OG, you think I can get paid and go back and play in college because it ain't Nick?
Check out Point Game with John Wall and CJ Toledano on the iHeartRadio app, DraftKings YouTube, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Snag a Job is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snag a Job is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position. Warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer? Yeah, Snagajob's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text snag to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
All right, welcome back. It's time now for the Sunday Drive presented by the first ever Toyota Grand Highlander. Let's head to Baltimore where Greggy's Ravens look to keep it rolling against the Brownies. What? What's not true?
A little pause. Here's the snap. It's a good one. The hold is good. The kick is on its way. End over end. And it is good, but there's a flag on the field. Hold everything.
Don't flag me on the call.
Kyle Hamilton jumping over, and it looked like he made contact with the Brown trying to do the Miles Garrett. We'll see.
Yeah.
Think of the call.
Looks like it. Joel Bitonio celebrating,
yeah,
Tom.
Yeah, the Browns are celebrating.
Early leverage. Field goal will count. This will end the game.
And that will end the ball game. The Browns have won it 33-31. They've come from behind.
Where's Siciliano? Tom McCarthy with the call. WKRK. Another field goal at the gun. And this one, an absolute stunner. Dustin Hopkins makes up for a yanked PAT that would have tied the game in the second half after a stunning pick six by the Browns. He makes up for it with that field goal, and the Browns beat the Ravens 33-31. Now we welcome in quite possibly the largest Cleveland Brown fan physically. I mean, he's a beast.
I mean, Joe Thomas is a Browns fan now.
Yeah, but have you seen him recently? He's, you know, trim and...
He's pretty strong looking.
I'm just saying. I would roll the dice with Shook. The pipe, Nick Shook, feeling no pain, I'm sure, in Ohio today because a game that the Ravens seem to have completely in hand, they let get away, and the Browns are right in the thick of it in the AFC North as a result.
Yeah, biggest famous Browns fan, John Big Dog Thompson. I don't know if he's still with us, but when they came back in 99, he was the face of the expansion and the return to the league. So okay. I don't even come close to that guy. But
well, that guy seems fine, but I'm still going with Shook.
Yeah, we'll
plus
take
we don't
it.
Know
we'll
if he's
it.
Alive, so yeah, we're going to have exactly. to just put him we'll to the side.
It. Yeah, of course. I texted somebody I do a show with, a longtime friend, who is older than me, was around for the Browns heyday in the 80s, and I said, when was the last time that you saw a Browns team fight back in a game that looked like they were surely going to lose and actually finish the job, get to the precipice of it and come through? Because typically they botch that. He texted me back, 1988, which of course was a bit facetious, but that just goes to tell you how rare this is for the Browns, for them to go into Baltimore and win a game in this fashion, where they were down 17-3 before they could blink in the first quarter, where they were down by 14 points on four separate occasions.
Whoa.
And erased that every single time and didn't hold a lead until there were no seconds left on the clock. What a game in Baltimore. The fight I saw from this team, I have not seen from a Browns team in my life. And it's remarkable. It starts with their defense, but the offense did its part too. Deshaun Watson finally had a moment that, you know, kind of made Browns fans think that maybe that trade was worth it. He was nearly flawless in the second half, passes of over 10 air yards, a perfect 14 for 14, extending plays with his feet, even if he, you know, did suffer a bit of an ankle injury during this game. Just a remarkable performance on both sides of the ball, and one that I sat back and thought, wow, like I cannot believe that they won that game, because it was a statement against a team that looks like one of the best teams in football, and the Browns went toe-to-toe with them.
Shuggy, it's 24-9 late in the third quarter in this game. And I had said on the Thursday preview show that I thought this was the end of excuses for Watson. He needs to be a guy that these type of games is one of the biggest Browns games in a long time against the Ravens in Baltimore. There's a lot on the line. We all know, as Sestog is known to say, that they ripped from the belly of Cleveland, the Ravens. There's always going to be a lot of bad blood for that reason as well. And Andrew Siciliano, who I mentioned minutes ago, longtime Browns fan, he told me, texted me today, we were texting about the game. He said he's screaming at his phone on the podcast that I would even say that Watson needed to step up in this game because they were down three offensive linemen and he was in a very difficult spot. And you saw that in this game. There were not many times where Watson has a clean pocket to work with, and he's taken a beating, and the stats reflect it. He throws a pick six, Greg, immediately. His numbers are terrible. They just seem dead in the water. So the fact that the offense with Watson were able to steady themselves in the second half, it really was kind of a we're growing up type game for them.
Well,
yeah, you know, at one point he was 2 for 11 in this game. I mean, he looked pretty bad, and they looked bad as an offense. The offense,
and he finishes
line,
20 for 34. So do the math. Yeah. There was barely an incompletion after that.
Yeah, he's exactly 14-14 in the second half. But yeah, he looked jittery. The Ravens pass rush was going nuts. Jadeveon Clowney was having another big game. And then it all kind of shifted.
Well, the helmet interception pick six by Greg Newsome was massive in this game. And this is the third week out of three, I believe, where a ball bouncing off a helmet has turned into a huge play for the Browns. They're now 2-1 in those scenarios.
Three touchdowns, right?
Right. No, one. The Paul Adams wasn't a touchdown. It led to the game-winning touchdown for the Seahawks. But it's maybe that shows it's going the Browns' way. But I'm with you on the excuses. Forget about the tackles. It's like C.J. Stroud was lighting people up without an entire offensive line earlier in the season. The Texans lost 7 starters last week and just beat the Bengals. So, yes, if you're going to be a great quarterback, you do have to overcome things like that. And it sounds like Watson did today. Kind of talk me through the fourth quarter there where they do have those drives. It was a 75-yard drive that ended with the Elijah Moore touchdown, the game-winning field goal drive, and even before that, a 75-yard drive to get it to 24-17. Like, what did those drives look like? Was it like the Kevin Stefanski offense? Was it the Deshaun Watson offense? What were they doing well?
It was kind of vastly different from drive to drive, because the first one you talked about that made it 24-17 was a methodical drive. I think it was the longest drive the Browns had put together in terms of time and plays.
10 minutes long,
in like 10, 15 years. I can't remember exactly what the stat was, but it's been a very long time since they'd put that type of drive together. They ended it in classic Browns fashion, pounding it on the ground with Kareem Hunt after failing to do so on the doorstep of the end zone earlier in the game. So that was refreshing. But then the next drive, you start to feel a little desperation creep in, because you realize, it's early fourth quarter. We're running out of time. You're still down 2 scores. They go 75 yards in 6 plays. And the key play being Watson rolling away from pressure as he'd been under pressure all day, looking like, oh no, what's going to happen? Is he going to get strip sacked? Is he going to fumble? Is he going to make a mistake? And just as he's about to cross the line of scrimmage, he finds Elijah Moore wide open in the end zone for a touchdown. A connection that has not been there all year was refreshing to see as well. So there were two very different drives in terms of style. And then, of course, as you said, the pick six, that's really what changed everything. But even then, they get the ball with like 4.5 minutes to go. And I'm thinking, I don't know, man, full field. Like, all you got to do is get in field goal range. It'd be a lot nicer if you're the Browns, if you were tied right now, than being down 31-30. And yet they followed through. They came through.
And they killed the entire clock, which is very difficult to do.
At one point, I was like, they need to speed up a little bit, and they didn't. It was a measured drive. They made they connected on passes. David Njoku played a big part in the second half for them. And then the play that I think explained it all was who wants this win more? Hand off to Jerome Ford, going to the right side, and almost the entire offense gets into scrum with him and pushes him forward for an extra 6 yards. That right there defined who this Browns team could be, because they do play hard. Definitely play hard to the end.
And on the flip side of that, Greg, you have the Ravens, who, by the way, were banged up in this game as well. Cornerback Marlon Humphrey goes out. Left tackle Ronnie Stanley, he limped to the locker room. He did not return. It is now, that's three. They've had a great year overall, the Ravens, but that's now all three of their losses have been bad ones, like tough ones.
Ghastly.
And that run that Nick is referring to is like a who wants it more moment in the crucible of the game. And it's that DNA that I just wonder about with Baltimore. I know they're going to be okay. I know they're probably, I don't want to say they're probably going to win this division, because it is wide open. All of a sudden they have a half game lead on two teams. But can they really avoid this type of blow up in January? Because it pops up periodically with this team.
This is a 2-year trend now. No team in the NFL has lost more 10-point leads since the start of last season than John Harbaugh's Ravens. So, you know who's second? Like, he doesn't have a coaching job anymore. It's Josh McDaniels and the Raiders. So it's like, it's crazy that now in this game they got outgained. The other two that they blew early in the season, they totally outplayed their opponents and managed to lose. This one, they have a monster lead and get outplayed. They couldn't run the ball nearly as well as the Browns. There is two things can be true. I think they have the ingredients to go win a Super Bowl because they're very balanced, and yet there is something about them that clearly blows games with leads, and that's very worrisome.
It's the fourth quarter. It was the case against Pittsburgh. The game against Indianapolis was just a weird one where they had like 9 opportunities to win it and just couldn't do the job. It's been the margins. Like, they're just not winning in the margins, and it's leading to these, not like collapses or meltdowns, but somewhere in between with a descriptive word I can't come up with right now. That's what they've been, is just like slowly falling apart and letting the other team that kind of doesn't have any business being in the game. The Pittsburgh game was like that. Even today was like that. They let them back in the game, and then before they know it, they look up and they're about to lose, or they are losing. And that's a concerning sign, because if you're a contender, you really want to win a Super Bowl. You don't make those types of mistakes against the better opponents. And
at home,
they've done it against the lesser
ones. Home.
Yeah.
Well, now you got the Bengals. Like, this division race is
It's fun.
Insane.
Guess
the
what?
The Bengals are in last place.
And who do you think the Browns have? They got the Steelers. So week 11 is going to be a lot of fun. And that was the Sunday Drive presented by Toyota. Let's go places. Learn more at toyota.com/Grand Highlander. Shook, let's head to Seattle, another game that went down to the very end.
Here we go. It comes down to this. Jason Myers between the hash marks from 43. The kick is going to be long enough, and the kick is good.
Another
Jason
one.
Myers wins it on the last play of the game. The Seahawks facing all kinds of issues in the fourth quarter. They come back, they score, and now they win it on the last play from 43 yards out.
Steve Rabel, Seahawks Radio. Jason Myers at 5 field goals, including that 43-yarder you heard. His time expired, and the Seattle Seahawks survive the Washington Commanders, a 29-26 win. Shook, we heard there that, I don't know exactly how it was phrased there, all kinds of problems or obstacles. What is he referring to for Seattle today?
I think this game was a perfect example of how football is very much a four-quarter sport, because this was a snooze fest going into halftime, guys. Just field goals left and right, one touchdown and an extra point that wasn't converted, so it made it look like 2 field goals on the scoreboard. I thought, is this game ever going to wake up? When are these teams actually going to start to find some success offensively? Now, Seattle's defense has been young and hungry and good, you know that, and everything else. We've been around that block a few times. But it was more an example of these two teams that just couldn't hit their stride. And then all of a sudden, out of nowhere, the points start coming in bunches. The last 5 possessions between these two teams, they went like this: field goal, touchdown, 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 field goal, end of game. That's where all the points came from, because before that, it was punt, 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 field goal, fumble, end of half, all that in between. Nobody could get the job done. It's like they just woke up and went, oh God, we're playing football. It's the fourth quarter. It's a tie game, or it's a very close game. Maybe we should do our jobs. And Seattle ended up being the one, because they had the ball last. They did their job better.
Well, they had 27 first downs, 489 yards. It didn't feel like it. You know, even in the first half, they had over 200 yards. They were sloppy. I think it was a big second half for Geno. Look, there were some boos at, what is it? What do they call it now?
I believe it's yeah, Lumen. It's not the clink anymore. Yeah, yeah, Lumen.
There were some boos, which you know you don't hear. There's certainly been a lot. Like I know you've been talking, Gino, and I've been pushing back, but you're not the only one. Locally, they've been talking about whether they should bench Drew Locke, and everyone pushing back on that. And he was uneven, even though his numbers weren't bad. Gino was very uneven, was missing some throws, and he wasn't on the same page with his receivers in the first half, which is why I think the second half was huge, because he basically played perfect. Him and Lockett connected, ended up with 8 for 92. That was a great touchdown pass to him. DK Metcalf, who didn't really like use his physicality, I think sometimes like he doesn't play as big as he is, and let a few balls, like contested catches. He didn't get them in the first half. He's a monster in the second half, including on the game-winning drive, a couple game-winning drives. And Gino had a couple total dimes. So to finish the game the way he did, to quiet it down on really their defense has been fine this year. It's been their offense that has concerned me. They needed a big offensive game, and they got it. And they're 6-3, even though that hasn't felt like a great 6-3.
I would have that two drives by Sam Howell that in the fourth quarter there to tie the game. I would have went for two, maybe.
Yes.
To that last
The Ron Rivera one, and maybe he didn't because he thought there was too much time left. That is sort of the analytical way to look at it, is actually when there's a minute left, there's such a good chance they could get a field goal anyways that don't even bother to risk it. But Ron's got like the Riverboat Ron of quarterbacks right now. You might as well go after him. He really is like mini Russ. I was thinking that because he was in Seattle. Like Sam Howell is poor man's Russ Wilson. Like everything today that was good was out of structure. It wasn't any like timing throws. But
they're talking about the good Russ Wilson from Seattle.
Yeah, absolutely. Good. And there were a lot. There was a lot good from Howell today.
It's weird because I watched Sam Howell and I'm like slowly falling in love with his play style, even though there's like a boneheaded mistake or two every game. You know it's coming. He did it in New England and threw a pick in the end zone. He did it on Sunday when he tried to scramble too far and ended up fumbling. But that fumble didn't end up hurting them because Seattle couldn't do anything with it. But at the same time, it's the out of structure stuff. It's the way that he just finds ways to make plays. And it's the touchdown drives that he had in the fourth quarter of this game, including the touchdown pass to De'Ami Brown that tied the game.
I mean, that was like, oh, that was a gem.
Yeah. Strike over the middle. It was so stunning that I think the defense was shocked he had the ball. And then he's in the end zone and the stadium's stunned and they don't know what to say because they were pretty much trying to put away a win right there. And so I love watching him play. I very much agree with
it. It ended up working out well for them that they gave up the score that quickly.
And they sold at the deadline. So this is not the same team that broke camp. But, you know, Washington's defense was supposed to lift them this year and it's been bad. They get the Cowboys twice still. They get the Dolphins and the Niners still on their schedule. So I think Washington is going to make a quick exit from the playoff picture, but maybe they'll be fun watching it as they do it. Let's move on. One more, Shook. You want to hang around for one more?
Let's do it.
Let's head to Tampa where the Bucs are looking to get off the schneid.
Here's Mayfield. Shotgun look. Looks right. Now back to his left. Those toward his left. Caught ball. Evans at the 5. To the 3. 2.
Schneid.
One, touchdown Tampa Bay. There you go. Fire the cannons. Mike Evans.
Yeah, really a nice job. Now Baker, he had those happy feet. He looked to his left and his right, but then he was able to find Mike Evans coming on an in route right in the middle of the field.
I love that. Gene Dagger Hoffa. WFU. As Mike Evans atoned for a hideous drop earlier in the game on a short touchdown with that bulldozing TD score, provided the Bucs with some breathing room in an eventual 20-6 win over the Titans. Shooky, the Bucs snap a four-game losing skid, and the Titans are back to being one of the most boring teams in the world. Is that about right?
Yeah, that's absolutely right. Look, we'll go winners first because the Buccaneers finally experienced the sweet taste of victory for the first time in a month, something that they probably felt they should have had once or twice prior, and it was Baker Mayfield leading the way. My buddy, longtime best friend since college, was in town this weekend. He works in Tampa. He said the discourse down there is that they should consider going to Kyle Trask, and I said, are you crazy? Have you watched this team? Baker's one of the only good things with this offense right now, and Mike Evans is a big reason
why.
That's
just what literally every fan base does. Like, if you lose games quarterback, no matter what, there's no context. Yeah.
It's the worst. They exactly.
Baker basically won a game last week before it got stolen away by the kid.
It was his fault that they gave up 39 points, but it was also his fault that Mike Evans couldn't catch a pass today, right? Wrong. Mike Evans was going through it on the sideline emotionally. He walks over to the sideline. He slams a cooler with his fist. He puts a towel over his head. His head is in his hands. He's emotionally distraught because he can't figure out how to catch passes, and then suddenly he finds it again. And that's how they just cruise to a victory. And I say cruise because it was only 20-6. But if you watch this Titans offense last week or this week, you know their ceiling is very low. And that's not a knock on Will Levis.
I didn't know that even after watching it last week. I thought they were showing some promise last week.
Yeah, there's this promise, but they don't finish the drives. This is a problem. This is a big problem.
Well, Levis had the 4-touchdown game. And then even on Thursday night against the Steelers, he was throwing some balls that were like, okay, you see what? See what's there. So I was kind of bummed to be watching this one from afar and be like, oh, where is the sizzle? We thought maybe we had a steak on our hands here, but apparently not.
Well, you know what the problem is, guys, is they can't run the ball. Derrick Henry, 2.2 yards per carry today on 11 attempts. Like, that's not going to get the job done. You have a rookie quarterback. What's the best way to help him out? Get some easy targets to your tight ends and establish a running game. They don't have that. I think it starts up front for them. It's not Levis's problem. He's a rookie. He's still trying to figure it out, and he's showing off his arm and all that stuff. He's doing all right. But the offense, just their potential is not there. That's why they had 6 points in this game today. It's not that Tampa's defense is suddenly great again. It's that they're playing a team that was much less capable offensively than the opponent they faced last week. So it's going to be tough for the Titans. I hate to say it because I was not a Will Levis fan coming out of the draft, but I've been pleasantly surprised by how he's played. It's just that, you know, one stat really defined it to me. Tampa sent the blitz all afternoon at him because they had no fear that he was going to make them pay for it, because they had no reason to fear it because he's a young guy and they lack talent in certain areas. So going to be a tough one, Titans fans. I'm sorry. Maybe he's your future, but this year is not going to be an easy one to swallow.
Doesn't Shook have that little boy on Christmas Eve glow? Is that like at the family party, Christmas Eve party, where it's about 6 p.m. Everybody's, you know, had their dinner or whatever, and now it's becoming real that we're going home soon and it's off the bed with the milk and cookies and Santa's coming. That Shook today after the Browns game. He's just in a great, he's in a great happy place. He's in that little boy or girl on Christmas Eve place, and you deserve it, Shooky.
I'm already formulating my strategy to convince my mother to let me open a gift early.
Oh, I love it. I love it. I mean, the Cavs beat the Warriors the other night.
Season sweep, baby. Let's go.
It is Cleveland time. And Bucks fans, like your buddy, or I don't know, maybe he just lives there and he's not a fan, they're tied in the loss column for the lead in the NFC South. There is no reason that the Bucks can't win this lousy division. I mean, I give them just about as good a chance as the other two contenders. At least they have, you know, Mike Evans having this nice throwback season. He reminds me of T.O. No one makes more tough catches but drops easier catches than
me.
I can even sit back and enjoy Baker Mayfield's play and have no disdain for him whatsoever. Like, I'm enjoying watching him play quarterback.
You're in a good place. You're in a very healthy mindset.
When I woke up this morning, I was feeling pretty dangerous.
and we all love it.
Sure.
All right, Chucky. Thanks, bud. See you next week.
All right, guys. Thanks.
All right, let's keep moving to the field formerly known as Heinz.
3 seconds left, first and 10 at the 16. They're in cover six. Here's the snap. He's back. He looks. He fires for the goal line. Intercepted. And that is Casey running up the sideline.
Go down.
This game's over.
Don't kill the special teams coach. You killed the special teams coach.
Intended to Watson.
Oh, it just got a little heady over there. Some people got rocked.
Packers got rocked.
They sure did. Tough year, Green Bay. The Steelers got scoring runs from Jaylen Warren and Najee Harris. For the defense, closed it out with that interception. It was 23-19 win over the Packers in Pittsburgh. Greg, this feels like a lot of Steelers games this year.
Yes.
They're outgamed. At times, they just seem like an undercooked entity, but then they make the play when it matters, and they get the big stop at the end, and all of a sudden, they got another win.
You took the words out of my mouth. I didn't feel like I learned anything about either one of these teams. They both continued on the path. I guess I would say both offenses have shown some signs of life the last couple of weeks, and that continued.
Mm-hmm.
The Steelers ran for 205 yards. And when they ran that well against the Titans, who are a pretty good run defense, thought, okay, maybe they got something here. Warren goes for 101. Najee Harris goes for 82. They both have the touchdowns, as you mentioned. So they had a running game. Pickett still had his share of struggles, but it's something. Even for them, getting over 300 yards is something. And the Packers actually moved the ball pretty well all game. They just kind of ran out of time and couldn't get that winning touchdown.
Go ahead. Lock it up.
What? Oh, yeah, that's right. I did lock it up. Give it to me, Eric.
Eric, I'm having a down year in the locks. At the very least, you shouldn't have me engineering the
lock. I mean, I
down.
Sort of forgot. Mark also locked this up, so double it up here. We were talking about it earlier. And I just want to say thanks. If Nick Wesseling, if you're listening, I was absolutely planning to lock the Ravens, but you sort of shamed me out of taking these six and a half point spread. So you got me a win today. Thank you. I'm not even joking. Man, that's 100% what happened.
I mean, you're just
that just shows
you're
what,
living
it's
a blessed existence in the picks this year. Let's face it. You're like the Falcons at the beginning of the year.
But this is what the Steelers do. I mean, I think they're AP said they're the 22nd team, I believe, Josh Dubow of the AP, to be outgained. I mean, 9 straight weeks to start the season.
Oh, come on. They're 6-3.
And the other teams that have done that are a combined 33-152. And
so that suggests, okay, let's stop there for a second. That suggests that there's regression coming for this team, because it's not like they play in a bad, it's not like using the Falcons as an example. They're playing in some dog division.
Okay.
And stealing a bunch of wins. They are in the best division in football, and yet they have found a way each almost every week here. They're 6-3 now. And you mentioned Pickett, like he is not making the strides that they expected him to. At a certain point, you think this is going to catch up with them. Or if you want to look at it as a positive side of things as a Steelers fan, they're still figuring things out and winning. And if they ever actually lock into something offensively in terms of actual some type of style, maybe they can, you know, this is just the beginning.
Well, that's how I've been looking at that. At some point, if they keep winning these games, they're kind of bound to start playing better and then actually deserve to win these games. And I actually think Pickett, although he was very lucky, there was a call Packers fans will be going crazy about, where it appeared he threw a backwards pass that would have been a change of possession. They ruled that it was not. There wasn't like a perfect angle that was right on the right spot to see it, until someone on Twitter, I don't know if they were in the crowd or what it was, did sort of have the right angle, and it did.
Would it have been like a scoop and score or what?
No, but there would have been a change of possession, yeah. and ball in the Steelers end. And I actually was.
They're living dangerously.
They are.
No doubt about it.
I was encouraged late in this game. I wanted to point out it was 3rd and 9 with just over 2 minutes to go, and the Packers did not have a timeout.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, with exactly 2 minutes to go, it was after the 2 minute warning, and I was stunned that they called a pass there. So instead of running the ball, they actually trusted Pickett to throw the ball, and he threw a dime for 28 yards, and it got called back because of an offensive pass interference. That did lead to that play, but it was a very aggressive, extremely aggressive play call, I would say, considering the situation. They hit it, the penalty didn't happen, and then they ended up making the spot. They're not a great defense right now, but they have been playing well, like when they've needed to, including this game.
And the Packers, was it LaFleur or was it the GM that kind of put Love a little bit on the spot in the second half, saying they need to see something. Still waiting for him to kind of to break through here. There's been an issue for Love with Christian Watson, which has been a surprise. I think a lot of us saw Watson as a guy that could take the next step this year because of how well things ended last year. Love has 10 interceptions this year. 5 of them are when targeting Watson, and you're seeing it almost every week where they just are not on the same page.
Well, Watson, it was a tough throw to try to attempt, but Love's first interception went off Watson's hands in the end zone. It would have been a great catch, but ultimately it was a pretty good throw. He got it to Watson's hand. It got deflected. That was one of the reasons they lost. I thought this was, I would have to watch it even closer, but I think this was Love's best game of the season. They said they wanted to see more out of him. A 3rd and 7 play, touchdown. 3rd and 16 play, touchdown. 4th and 6 play, picked it up with a pass that they went for. It was very aggressive. 3rd and 7 play late in the game, 46 yards. 3rd and 10 play late in the game, 32 yards. And the 2 interceptions, you could almost understand. You know, you hate to end the game that way, but one hit Watson's hand. One was kind of at the very end. So I thought he showed some progress.
All right, let's keep moving here. The Niners went into their bye with a bad taste in their mouth, a 3-game losing streak. Who saw that coming? And they go to Jacksonville to face the Jaguars, who are on a winning streak. Would the losing streak continue? Not even close.
Second down, one. A play call.
Losing streak.
Here.
It gone.
Under center, a five-step drop.
Jags winning streak. It gone.
The sideline. Kittle.
Oh.
He's got it and he's gone. Touchdown.
Oh, he's strutting.
San Francisco.
That was next level.
Kittle
keep
doing.
Feeding the beast on a wheel route and George Kittle's wheels. There is nothing wrong with him.
They
love
never
that
feed.
Call. Love that call.
They never. Yeah, that is great. Keep feeding the beast. They don't do that really with Kittle typically. He only gets a few opportunities in this offense to make an impact most weeks, and he always seems to. Greg Popp and Tim Ryan with the call. Brock Purdy. Okay, there's another theme, Greg, that can go by the wayside because he played great on Sunday, throwing three touchdown passes, including that 66-yarder to George Kittle. And the Niners snapped that three-game losing skid with a 34-3 beatdown of the Jags, who deliver a comprehensive stinker to end their winning streak at five games. Greg, you won't hear any talk about what's wrong with Brock this week. All of a sudden, all is well with the Niners.
No, you won't hear that. I'm torn which side to start on because both sides dominated so thoroughly. Let's start with Brock. And I think he played outstanding, but I also think we knew the 49ers were back early when they were running the ball well. This is against one of the best run defenses in the league on paper. Maybe we overrated the Jaguars' defense, but the numbers were great. CMC gets 142 from scrimmage. The 49ers run for 144. Purdy was throwing the ball well right off the bat, but they were in good down and distance situations. I think Trent Williams being back was huge. Like, he was particularly blowing open huge holes. He did it, I believe, on the Deebo Samuel touchdown as well. Deebo had a rushing touchdown. So part of it was just like they're healthier. Dre Greenlaw looked a lot healthier than he has at earlier points of the season. But when they can run, it all makes sense. And there was like two plays where Purdy did kind of what I'm talking about, where it's like, I think he's been the same guy all along. And it, like, sometimes his crazy plays work, sometimes they don't. His first touchdown was a wild throw, and it was a really good throw to Ayuk, but it was into like double coverage in the end zone, and he hit it. That touchdown to Kittle, I think, was an underratedly great throw. Yeah, Kittle like got open late, but Purdy just stood in there and took a hit. And if it was just like a half second earlier, it's like that hand hits his arm, it flies up, it's an interception. So he can take risks, but I actually think he played a little safer other than those plays for the rest of the game, and they just looked freaking amazing. I mean, they looked like the best team in the NFL again.
I think one of the things working against Purdy, beyond just this overall, oh, he was Mr. Irrelevant, blah, 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 is he doesn't have great arm talent in terms of strength, so it doesn't come out of his hand like some of the guys that have, you know, howitzers, to use that adjective that's been thrown around for decades in our league, which is a very large gun, Greg.
Like, yeah, it is kind of funny.
Like an old, like, World War II, like.
I mean, you could write a term paper on the war, like, lexicon in football. There's a lot.
Right, because you could be a basic and say, oh, he's got a cannon for an arm.
Right.
But if you say howitzer, it's like, oh, that guy, now that's a man. That's just the way this country is. Anyway, on the other side of the ball.
Yes, we should get there, too.
The Jaguars, and here's something. Very rarely happens for me, but got this one wrong, Greg. I really thought this was a Trevor Lawrence big step forward year. I thought I had him as a dark horse for MVP, and I'm not putting all of their issues on Lawrence, but the Jacksonville offense, even during that five-game winning streak, you're just not seeing that big step forward, and this was obviously a flameout at home against a big contender. They have four turnovers, and there just isn't enough consistency and really big plays in this offense.
Three turnovers from Trevor Lawrence, you know, individually, two picks and a fumble. Like, the first half, I thought it was, you know, it was 13-3 at halftime, and I actually think that it was closer than the score indicated, but they were just making big mistakes. Lawrence then sort of collapsed in the second half, and you're absolutely right. There's going to be a Trevor Lawrence, how come he's not making the leap? He's been a little bit part of the problem this season, conversation this week. I don't know if I'm ready to go there yet. But he's not elevating everything around him. Like, I think he avoids mistakes well for the most part. He didn't today, but he hasn't been making enough special throws. And today especially, like, Nick Bosa and Chase Young, they combined for a sack early in this one where Bosa just literally just takes the ball away from Lawrence. And that's what, you know, they imagined when they traded for Chase Young. He was quiet otherwise, but the rest of the defensive line really ate. So I think it's a combination of things, as it often is. Their offensive line for the Jaguars definitely lost that matchup today.
And it's expectations were so sky high for Lawrence coming into the league that you expected at this point he would be in full flight, and yet he's taken a bit of a step back. And I think it also shows why sports are great, that you had this matchup where the final pick of the draft, Brock Purdy, went against the first pick in the draft and Lawrence, and you saw the guy who's picked last easily outplay his,
I call him a rival.
Rival strong.
Well, they weren't the
counterpart.
Same.
Let's just go with
counterpart. Weren't the same draft, right, now that I think about it.
Howitzer v. Howitzer. Who comes?
I think like two things could be true. People should not be like crushing Lawrence, but
people are ready to crush, though. Like, if he has one more, it's going to be
I can kind of see it out there. It's like I saw Richard Sherman was talking about, and I think what Richard Sherman is saying is right, is that we were told he was generational. And to this point, on balance, it hasn't been generational. But even this year, I would say he's been good. He's not the first thing. I just was a little surprised that both their lines were dominated. It kind of reminds me of that Ravens-Seahawks game last week, where it's like, yes, Geno played bad in that Seahawks-Ravens game, but both lines were just so dominant for the Ravens on both sides of the ball. It's like, well, it's hard to really just talk about the quarterback. Like, the team was just so much better, and that was the case. This was a measuring stick game in Jacksonville. They were talking about it, and they got whacked with that stick. 49ers took that stick out, and Nick Wesseling had a great lock here. I would give him credit for that. This was the game to lock, 34-3.
Yeah, that is. Dang. I don't know if Nick's lost a lock in quite a bit now. So the zoo is starting to feel itself, led by Nick. I think he called himself the zookeeper, which is.
I mean, he lucked
that's
out.
That's branding.
I still remember that Jets one. Maybe that was the win that really turned the zoo's season.
Hey, I mean, you should talk. You've been falling into locks this season every week.
Please, none of them.
I was going to lock this, and then I accidentally locked that, and it all worked out for me. How many times do I have to hear the same themes?
So my math is correct. It would be Greg at 9-1 now.
I didn't ask for this.
We don't need
either.
To hear this. Yeah,
but no, I'm saying because you were talking about the West Bros. They are, I think that would put them two behind Greg at 7-3.
That's in the mix.
Good.
No. Sorry. In the mix. I know, Dan. I'm sorry.
We don't need to dwell on my failures.
You know what? We'll clip this together. We don't even have to bring it up again.
We'll just neatly just clip this out in the edit, and no one will have ever heard it. All right. Let's keep moving and head to the desert where Kyler Murray's back. How about that?
Here we go. The snap's good. The ball's down. The kick is up. And the kick is good. And the Cardinals win it. 25-23.
You know.
Welcome back, Kyler. Kyler Murray engineering the game-winning drive. And Arizona gets its second win of the season.
It doesn't get any better than that for Kyler Murray's return.
I like that that's like an actual human being. We just like go to the grocery store. I'm like, give me half a pound of ham. Like, he lives his entire life talking like that, and everyone around him has to act like it's normal. Who is that, Wolfley?
Oh yeah.
Which Wolfley? Because we got
Ron.
Couple.
That's Ron.
That's Ronnie Wolf.
Yeah, that actually surprised me today. I did notice making up our little call sheet. There are quite a few Wolfleys in the in the color commentary business.
I think because we automatically say, oh, game-winning field goal. Let's use that as a highlight. We should have went with some Kyler magic there, because who wants to watch a 23-yarder in any capacity?
Matt Prater still getting it done.
Big-time production meeting after the show today.
Here we go. Kyler. You want one?
All right. Ooh, we'll give it to me.
Eric Roberts in a big spot.
Randy, give it to me, Roberts.
Randy got me. Here you go, Randy.
Give it to me, Funk.
Shotgun snap. Murray backs up to
56
throw.
56 seconds
launching
to go
deep.
Here.
Near side. It is underthrown. Oh, but it's caught at the 10-yard line by McBride. He gets up to run, and he's tackled at the 9. McBride, the first Cardinal tight end in 34 years with a 100-yard receiving game.
What?
And he puts the Cardinals in first and goal.
How many years?
Get Wolfley in here. We need Wolfley. Oh.
Oh, I'd like to have 1/4 pound of Swiss.
That was good. I like that. Kyler Murray threw for 249 yards, including that big tight end hookup to set up the game winner by Matt Prater. Kyler also ran for a touchdown in his return from reconstructive knee surgery, and the Cards snap a 6-game losing streak, edging the Falcons 25-23. Greggy, watching the highlights here reminded me how much I missed. I didn't think I would feel this way because he's never been my favorite player, but I miss seeing Kyler Murray with those tiny legs and the giant helmet just wreaking havoc on the second level of defenses.
I know. I was gassing Kyler up on Twitter today, and so many of the responses are just like, he looks so small out there. I think people just like weren't used
they
to
forgot.
Not seeing him. And
it's the helmet. The helmet really, it's seven times the size of a standard helmet in the league.
But he's a legit, top 10 talent at quarterback. And I would say a borderline just top 10 quarterback, period. And it was really exciting because he was just back. There was like, maybe there will be rust in future weeks, but he did the things that Kyler did. Like that throw to McBride, not a great throw, but the decision was awesome that he decided to be so aggressive in that spot. He saw the matchup that he liked. He went for it. And I think he made really good decisions throughout the game. So that might be a good sign moving forward for this offense. Drew Petzek, who did such a nice job with Dobbs, that like it's going to be a match. Like the offense made sense. They moved the ball. I thought they looked like the better team. And he also had a 13-yard scramble during that game-winning drive to keep it alive. And to me, that was the play of the game, where Murray traveled 68.9 yards on that scramble. He essentially ran back 30 yards, then ran forward about 40.
Love it.
And he had a top speed, and it's not going to get to, what do you like? You
20, want? Well, it's everybody's 21. I want 20.
I mean, he didn't even get close to that. He only got to 20.17, but it was his.
This is Kyler?
This is Kyler.
We actually have the sound of that play.
Let's go to it. We got all this sound. Fake me out. I mean, right after I did my NFL Plus segment on the short kings of 2023. It's a trend. It's his fastest speed, though, since 2021. So faster than anything he did last year, actually. So it kind of showed. He looked like he had juice, and he looked like a good quarterback today.
And Jonathan Gannon, had a conversation with Kyler Murray before the game. Because the Cardinals, who are a team, obviously, in big-time transition, trying to figure out their future, They did have the option of keeping him out of play this season and protecting themselves financially. They instead decide to get a look at Kyler, and apparently they're going to give him very little in terms of restrictions. Here's Gannon after the game.
Before this week, about maybe tempering what we expect from Kyler. When you saw that out there today, did he surprise you at all? Or?
Maybe that's why he laughed at me.
Kyler Murray does not lack for confidence, and I get that. That the Gannon was almost saying, maybe you should temper your expectations, Kyler. Like, let's not, get carried away. And he was just, like, laughing. He's like, come on, man. I'm Kyler Murray. I'm no Desmond Ridder. I'm no Taylor Heinicke.
What happened with the Falcons in this game?
Heinicke.
Don't tell me Desmond Ridder's back in my life.
He is.
Ow!
I think he's going to be the quarterback after the bye week because Heinicke and the Falcons averaged 1.5 yards per drop back. 1.5, under 4 yards per attempt when Heinicke actually threw the ball. And it was very Ridder-like. He was just holding on to the ball forever. They couldn't do anything throwing the ball, and it wasted a very nice Bijan Robinson game where he goes over 100 yards.
Oh, they gave him the football.
Yes, and gets a touchdown. Good. They did what everyone asked. They used him in the red zone, and Heinicke had a couple runs. They ran the ball well. I think they got, 184 yards on the ground, and yet Heinicke couldn't do anything throwing the ball, and then he hurt his hamstring. And he went out. Ridder comes in, and Ridder didn't do much, but he didn't do anything negatively, and he did run for a game-winning touchdown if the defense had just held on to it. They had a 74-yard fourth-quarter drive to take the lead when they were down 5 points. And to me, I think Arthur Smith's probably just looking for an excuse to put Ridder back in anyways, and he said he wanted to take the bye and then make the decision. Heinicke,
here we go.
Who knows how long he might be out anyways with the hamstring injury, so I think he's back.
And if Heinicke could be frustrated, but if you throw for 55 yards in three quarters before getting hurt, you leave yourself vulnerable to lose that gig. All right, let's take a break here, and then we'll finish up.
You go into your shower feeling tired, but as soon as you reach for the Irish Spring, your day immediately gets better. That crisp, fresh, unmistakable Irish Spring scent zings your brain and awakens your senses. So when you finally emerge from the shower 37 minutes later because you pay the water bill so you can stay in there as long as you want, you're ready to take on the day and smell great doing it. Irish Spring body wash and bar soap. Fresh, green, Irish. Shop now at a store near you.
What's up? I'm John Wall.
And I'm CJ Toledano, and we're starting a new podcast presented by DraftKings called Point Game. We're now joined by three-time NBA Sixth Man of the Year, elite bucket getter. Let's please welcome Jamal Crawford to Point Game, King of the Court one-on-one tournament. If they had it back in your prime, do you think you could have took it all?
I'm going to be honest with you. I don't think I could have took it all, but I think I would have shocked a lot of people. I think Kobe and everybody in their prime, Kobe would win a one-on-one contest.
Yeah, because you got to think, he's going to guard. He don't care about guarding.
He's going to guard.
He's going to guard. Like, you see him in the Olympics, he's going to guard. And then on top of that.
Like that, see that?
Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Sam Cassell to Point Game.
I remember you came out from crying tears. I mean, he was in a culture shock. And then he's going to withdraw us about winning.
Remember what I told you? I said, OG, you think I can get paid and go back and play in college because it ain't it?
Check out Point Game with John Wall and CJ Toledano on the iHeartRadio app, DraftKings YouTube, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Snag a Job is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snag a Job is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position. Warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer? Yeah, Snagajob's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly, with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text snag to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
All right. You may remember the first Sunday Night Football game of the year. It was a disaster for the Giants, 40-0, a loss to the Cowboys, and it was a sign of things to come. The rematch with Tommy DeVito behind center, it wasn't much better.
Second and 10, back to throw. Tyron Smith locks a guy up. Right side of the end zone, Lamb. Hello, CD. Touchdown, CD Lamb. Lamb now has a touchdown rushing and a touchdown receiving. And Aubrey will line up for the extra point that would make it 42-7.
Oh, my goodness. Brad Sham, the Sham God, friend of the show. Amazing, Greg, with just one pep talk from Tugboat meant for CD Lamb.
You're taking Dak credit Prescott. For this?
He has been the best wide receiver in the league for 3 weeks now.
Maybe we're a little too harsh on him. You know, he's playing well.
Look at the
before he got moved.
Look how it's different. Okay. Look at the difference. The end zone's being found. He is in the middle of everything, and the Cowboys are humming. Dak Prescott threw for 404 yards and 4 touchdowns. He ran for another score. This is one of the greatest Dak games you'll see. And I know it's against the Giants, but I'm just saying it was just taking candy from a baby. Cowboys rout the Giants for the second time this season, 49-17. The home winning streak for the Cowboys quietly is up to 12 games. And I'm going to do some quick math here. 49 plus 40. 89-17. 72-point margin. The largest in a sweep of an NFC East opponent ever for the Cowboys. If they could play the Giants every week, they would be the greatest team ever, as it was, as it is. They're 6-3, Greg, and a couple bumps in the road, of course. But, man, when this team is in full flight, they are fun to watch.
Well, just box score looking, there was a couple of numbers that I was like, is this number right? First of all, you just said it's 6-3. I was like, oh, yeah, the Cowboys are only 6-3. Why does it feel like they're better than that? Like,
right.
They have the same record as the Pittsburgh Steelers and the Seahawks, so that it doesn't quite compute.
I think the Cowboys had more total yardage in this game than the Steelers have had all year. So
The other number is 640 yards.
Right.
And 32 first downs. At one point in this game, the
640, 12 yards shy of the franchise record, Greg, today.
That is crazy. At one point in this game, it was 368 yards to 27, so there was the proverbial lipstick on a pick.
What?
Dak got, yeah, I know it was against the Giants, but he's been fantastic for 4 weeks. I don't know if he can keep this up the rest of the way. But for 4 weeks, 9.3 yards per attempt, 12 touchdowns. I think he's been the best quarterback in the league for those 4 weeks.
I was going to say, I think in a wide open year in this particular race, I think he is in the capital T, capital C convo for the MVP now. because his numbers are starting to really get inflated. He's playing for a team that is fighting for a division. It's the Cowboys. And I think he really has a chance here. And you saw some things. And again, you just don't want to get too crazy about it because the Giants are, they're moribund. We know that. This is
they're the worst team in the NFL. I guess the Panthers are close, but
now with you have Tommy DeVito at quarterback, in addition to all their other issues. And yes, I agree. They are the worst team in football. But they got big games. Yes, from CeeDee Lamb, who was a monster, 11 for 151. But Brandon Cooks came to life. They've been waiting all season for Brandon Cooks to be that guy that gives their offense balance and somebody that could take the top off. 9 for 173 and a touch on 10 targets. Michael Gallup even got in the mix with 2 touchdown catches in this game. Jake Ferguson continues to flash as a real guy at tight end and someone that they can continue to build around. They're still waiting for Tony Pollard to come around, and that's starting to become a real issue, I think, for this team, because even in this bloodbath where they nearly set the franchise record, he's averaging 3.7 yards per carry. Rico Dowdle outgained him. At a certain point, they might have to start looking at a timeshare with Pollard to try to see if maybe there's a way to unlock him, but that's a minor quibble. Everything else here tells you that the Cowboys have all the pieces to continue to build on this Texas Coast offense.
I think the last 2 weeks, and the Sham God pointed out in that highlight call, shows why he's so good, that Tyron Smith locking down whoever was rushing the passer. The Giants' defensive line has kind of fallen apart the last 2 weeks after being good. Tyron Smith and Tyler Smith next to each other the last 2 weeks, especially like 2 weeks ago, they were outstanding against Philadelphia. And Tyron Smith has been struggling with injuries. If they get him back to being, I'm not saying like Hall of Fame caliber Tyron Smith, but back to close to what he can be. And then Tyler Smith, to me, is one of the best young offensive linemen in the entire league. Those two guys next to each other on the left side, like you can build, like they got a lot to build around on offense, but that's another huge sort of weapon that they got. Like in this Cowboys team.
No, you want to see that next big test for them. You know, like you want to see how they rise in that situation, and the Giants just want to wait. They just want the season to be over. They are very much in play for the top quarterback in the draft class. So
you're going to look into this one, jerks.
But what, you know what? You just got
to. We'll see. We'll get to it. But I am tracking Tankathon, and there is a big Giants Patriots game coming up next week.
You know, Bill doesn't want to lose to the Giants.
Well, neither team, I think, is trying to lose. That's for sure. But
all right. Well, last one before Sunday Night Football. Let's head to Germany, where the international series came to an end. It was the, I believe, 50th international game for the NFL.
Wow.
So they celebrated by sending Mac Jones to the people of Europe.
Fourth and one converts for the Patriots. The clock is moving on them, though. They're out of timeouts. And Zappe fakes. He fakes a cracking of the ball. He fires it upfield. Picked off by the Colts. Intercepted by Rodney Thomas. Bailey Zappe trying to get cute. He fake blocking the ball. Trying to catch the Colts off guard. Then threw a laser over the middle. But it was picked off and snatched up by Rodney Thomas. Yes, sir. The Colts will take that. 31 seconds to go. And the Colts in Germany are going to be victorious.
Matt Taylor with a very enthusiastic call. Hey, you got a free trip to Germany. It wasn't a beautiful game. But he got to call a win.
For a 5-5 team.
For a 5-5 Colts team who get there with a 10-6 win on over the Patriots, a Patriots team that has all sorts of quarterback questions coming out of this game. That was Bailey Zappe throwing a fake spike interception. I don't know what was the funniest thing about it. The fact that he tried the fake spike or that he didn't recognize that nobody like noticed he really did it, so everyone in the secondary was in full coverage, and then he throws a balloon ball over the middle that never had any chance. And the reason he was in, Greg, was because Mac Jones struggled mightily and threw maybe the worst pass of his career in the previous possession on what should have been a touchdown. Instead, it was an interception, and Belichick is so mad and frustrated, he benches his quarterback with one series to go.
With one series?
I don't know if I've ever seen that.
Honestly. I haven't. I mean, I'm sure it's happened, and maybe I've even seen it, but I cannot remember a quarterback being benched for essentially a 2-minute drive to win the game. I mean, it's crazy, but I don't blame him at all. As bad as Bailey Zappe has looked in brief work this year, including the preseason, Mac Jones has just been too much for him. And the offensive line was terrible pass protecting early in this game. I get it. That's part of it. You know, they were without Trent Brown. But he just crumbled a handful of times this season where just like it all just became too much for him. And when you're short-arming like a wide-open Gesicki, the interception that you're talking about, when you're skying a throw that could also could have been a touchdown pass to Hunter Henry, they actually moved the ball well. They had 340 yards in this game. It's weirdly one of their better offensive games of the year, I would say. And they scored.
Oh, my God, Greg.
And they just because other things.
Two field goals. Wow.
Like, I'm just saying.
I know what you mean.
They ran for 167, so they were actually doing something. They were moving the ball. They looked like the better offense on the day, despite their quarterback not being able to do anything. But Mac Jones is just like too much for him. And they had to take him out.
Here's Belichick after the game. You would think with the bye coming up, the way that game ended, that it might finally be Mac Jones running out of lives here. But here's what Belichick said after the game.
Yeah, look, I made the decision. That's what it was. We'll deal with next week.
Do you still have faith
with
Mac Jones as your quarterback?
I have faith on all our players.
Yeah, I mean, Bill, of course, isn't going to say anything because he never says anything. But that benching Jones in that way tells you everything you need to know, and we'll see what happens next for the Patriots. But they are now 2-7, and it will only continue to amplify the talk about not just Mac Jones in the quarterback position, but Bill Belichick and what his future holds with the team. This is another in a a big spotlight game for the organization. It's, you know me, Greg. I live for Patriots suffering after all the years of me suffering and everyone else suffering. But it has gotten to the point where when they were showing those cuts to Robert Kraft in his luxury suite and he was looking crestfallen and increasingly frustrated, where it's not really surprising anymore because this just feels like this is now what the Patriots experience is, and all that stuff, all the many years of greatness feel like they're already kind of far in the rear view because they've had so many troubles in the last couple of years.
Kraft really wanted this game. He made it clear. He said it publicly. I think he said it privately. He said he wanted this game to be a reset because this season's been so disappointing. Like, he hadn't given up hope, and they've been pushing to be the Germany team for a long time. They wanted to do this game. They've been working on it for a long time. And then, you know, Sebastian Vollmer's on the call in Germany. He's a big podcaster over there working for our buddy Handsome Hank. And they have this game, which is the absolute bottom. In the same game that they left J.C. Jackson home, remember that one, Jack Jones was mysteriously benched for the first quarter plus again. They asked Mac Jones after the game why they didn't throw a Hail Mary on the final play of the first half, which was very curious.
Oh, no.
Instead, they had their biggest offensive play of the game to DeMario Douglas. And he said, that's a good question. No clue. Which is
who
like
said that?
Mac Jones. So
he threw a wide receiver screen with no trickeration. It was just let's run out.
It was DeMario Douglas. It was their biggest play of the game. It was their only play over 20 yards, I believe. Definitely their only throw over 20 yards. And he said no clue, which is a little bit of the Mac Jones of last year.
Yeah, there it is.
Their offensive line coach, I wish the best for him. He has a health issue, but he left the team earlier this week, Adrian Clem. So like, there's just like a lot happening. And I will remember this game because I watched the end of it with my entire family. You know, me and Walker, we're in the garage at 6:30. We're having fun. Like, we enjoyed it. We're not taking it too seriously. And when that play happened, it was great. The entire family actually burst out like in laughter.
What?
Like, no lie. When the Zappy thing happened, because we were just like, it was so, we were just.
Laughter?
Favorite. Because it was legitimately funny. It was objective.
People like me are laughing. You shouldn't be laughing about it.
I know, but
it.
We just were like, there's, like, they've watched enough to know how bad it is.
Yeah.
And
well, they don't know. They're so young, you know. Your
well,
kids.
But this year's Patriots. Ellis is not too involved, but Walker knows so bad. They're just like, this is going to go horribly. What's going to happen? Then you get the fakes like the interception. Everyone just starts laughing.
Just for me and for all the other people that, did deal with the Patriots' greatness for so long, let's hear the sentient Powerade bottle, Zolak, on the Mac Jones interception that spelled the end of his Patriots career. It is for fun.
Absolute gift he gives the Colts. So it's not competitive.
He had Gesicki running behind the defender.
Put it up in the back end zone. Step What's he looking at? You got to make a move, Bill. Make a move. Bye week's here.
Maybe, forget the bye week. Maybe Bill was listening to Scott. He's listening to the broadcast.
It's good analysis.
Good job, Colts, by the way. You know, I know Colts fans will
I mean, let's not go too crazy here.
All I'm saying is good job, Shane Steichen. You're 5-5. You have no reason to be. That's good coaching. Jonathan Taylor, nice body control on that first touchdown. It was actually quite a nice run on a fourth down that ended up being the difference of the game. You got Buckner. You got some pass rush. Like, the fact they're 5-5.
Michael Pittman's like, that should have been my touchdown.
Right. I'm saying if you're a Colts fan, you're like, hey, we got the coach. Hopefully we got the quarterback. We won't find out till next year. We're doing some things.
Yeah, they're hanging around, and at the very least, they're playing for something after Thanksgiving. So there you go. Let's head to Sunday Night Football.
Final play of the game. No timeouts left.
I never liked this prevent defense. I would like to have a rush, but I get it.
From the 44, Wilson back to throw. Crosby spins him around. Wilson being chased. Crosby's got him back at the 40. Wilson's going to heave to the end zone to our right. Hits up in the air, and it's batted down. Nate Hobbs got his hands on it to knock it down at the goal line, and the Raiders win at home. 16-12 to get to 5-5 on the season.
Yes, the Las Vegas Raiders, with Antonio Pierce leading the charge, are somehow, some way, in the thick of the AFC playoff race after another win, sweeping the Meadowlands occupants. Giants first in a blowout, and then edging the Jets 16-12 when Zach Wilson's desperation Hail Mary heave toward Garrett Wilson was broken up by Jets tight end Tyler Conklin. Nice play, bud. And the Raiders improved to 4-1 at home, Greg. They are not an impressive team. This wasn't a pretty game, but a battle of also-rans. It is the Raiders who have a pulse as we head toward Thanksgiving, and the Jets who look like they're fading away.
Well, it's tough to separate these teams, and if they were in the NFC, you would feel like long-term they maybe have a better chance to make the playoffs, but they both only have 5 losses, so it still feels big at this point in the season, and you're just wondering, like, how do the Raiders win these games exactly? Because it's a rookie quarterback, Aiden O'Connell, who's looked okay through 2 weeks, had a bad interception, but otherwise some good plays. But no running back in the league dominates the ball more than Josh Jacobs. He has the highest percentage of plays of anyone on any offense. And then today, Devontae Adams had a higher percentage of air yards in this game in terms of like the targets, 13 targets in this game, and just like air yards, I think, of any receiver of any game this year. So it's like 4 different guys and a lot of good speeches by Antonio Pierce and then Max Crosby. If there's one positive, I guess, about putting the Raiders in primetime so much, like so much, why so much? It has kind of been the, wow, Max Crosby is one of the best football players on earth and is just involved in every play. So a nice couple of months for Max.
Jackpot, baby!
Yeah, you get the Crosby show, and I think Josh Jacobs, you're starting to see now as the season, has reached the halfway point. It took him a while to get going after that long holdout, but he had some runs in this game, including a 40-yard run and that run where he carried the Jets defense for 5 or 6 yards. He also had a big fumble that in the fourth quarter when it looked like the Raiders were about to put the game away. But in general, he seems more like the player he was last year when he was the rushing champ. Devontae Adams continues to be far less productive than he was at any other time in his career, but at least he's in the mix in this game, 6 for 86. And
they only had 153 through the air.
Right. So, going against a stout Jets defense, that's going to play. So, yeah, I think the Raiders, on the Raiders side of the ball, it's not going to be pretty. Aiden O'Connell is not, looking like C.J. Stroud out there, but it gets a little bit messy at the bottom of the AFC playoff picture, and maybe this is one of those teams that hang around even if nobody wants them around. On the Jets side of things, I could be mad. I could be, screaming and cursing and shaking my fists at the football gods about that last play, because it really was a beautiful scramble to get away from Max Crosby by Wilson to square his shoulders and then throw a beautiful ball to the end zone there, and Garrett Wilson really did come very close to it. And I'm not, and it's not, that's not a joke. Conklin, and you can't blame him, Tyler Conklin, the Jet tight end, he's just throwing his hands up too, and he's the one that actually knocks it away from Garrett Wilson, and it would have been a miraculous win for the Jets. And the reason I can't complain is the Jets have already had two or three miraculous wins this year. So you can't just expect them to keep on pulling a rabbit out of the hat. And you certainly can't expect the offense to make a big play when it counts. I mean, it came down to that last throw, but really the Jets had a chance here in their previous possession to truly take the game and steal it from the Raiders. And Zach Wilson stares down Alan Lazard and throws an interception to Robert Spillane that really kind of, for all intents and purposes, truly kind of buried the team. They did do a good job getting it back, the defense, Greg, but it's the same story with this offense, which has gone, what are we up to now?
I think 35 drives, if my numbers are right, and 169 minutes of game time. Can that be right?
I mean, it sounds probably. I mean, but it is about 35 to 36 possessions now without a touchdown. And it just seems like the team's head is in the sand on this with the quarterback, with the play caller, Nathaniel Hackett, with the personnel, with the scheme. Like, they're not changing anything. And I wonder, Greg, how much of that is, and as the season slips away and they lose the tiebreaker now to the Raiders, they lose the tiebreaker to the Chargers last week, two conference losses, so very bad for their playoff hopes. How much is this tied into the true boss of the organization, Aaron Rodgers, who again floated something to NBC about a return? And it's like they want to just keep everything in place until he gets here to save us. And it's certainly no way to try to keep a season alive as it all starts to fade away.
Yeah, he said mid-December to Melissa, according to Melissa Stark, that was the goal.
And it's mid-November right now for those tracking. So he says he's about a month away, potentially.
And so that would be, you know, maybe their game against the Commanders, which would be, you know, with only 3 weeks left in the season, most likely. PFT also put something out that it's more likely that he wouldn't be ready till OTAs, for what it's worth. I it's tough. This game is actually why they can't change off of it, because I understand why they would leave this game thinking, oh man, we're not that far away. Now, on one hand, we haven't scored a freaking touchdown in almost three games, 35 drives, I think. And yet Zach Wilson on those final two drives made some great throws. I mean, to get the ball in position, once they fell down a touch, you know, once Jacobs fumbled that ball, and it was Jacobs' first fumble, I think, in 300-something touches. So, like, that's pretty rare that would happen. 346 straight top touches without losing a fumble, and then he fumbled it. They get it, and you almost feel like, oh, the magic's happened again. Zach Wilson made some really good plays to move the ball down the field. Then he stares down the interception. Then he gets the ball back again, and, I mean, that throw to Conklin he had to set up the Hail Mary was incredible, too. So it's like you're seeing these little flashes, and he started the game 5-for-7 for 84 yards, and he almost ran in for a touchdown. This is actually one of Zach Wilson's best games of the season.
And think about that, though.
Right.
They didn't score a touchdown. Yeah. And yes, he nearly had a touchdown scramble, but stepped out of bounds, and then they shoot themselves in the foot with penalties on that drive. He also had the no-look pass to Alan Lazard on that penultimate drive that he rattled at home because Lazard was trying almost to drop the ball, but he held on to it.
It was probably his third best game. He had that two-game stretch where he looked okay. This one, I was like, okay. But they also, the defense only allowed two first downs in the first 25 minutes, Dan, and it was 9-3 at that point. And the Jets had a chance, too, to go down and at least take the clock away at the end of the first half, and they couldn't do that. And that's where they are not taking advantage, and they're asking the defense to do so much. They should have been up by two scores at halftime, and they kind of just frittered that part away, and that is on the offense.
Yeah, and it's the same thing I said last week and probably the week before. Like, the way this team is now set up, it is the defense has to dominate, and it's not enough to just dominate. They also have to have takeaways that either produce points or set up the offense on a very short field. And
they even did have two turnovers.
But they didn't have the impact. They actually did have one in the first half that set them up with a field goal. But unless the defense does something truly special or special teams, they're just not going to win games the way they are set up. Because in addition to the Wilson struggles and the offensive line struggle, the running game now is stuck in mud. So it is to me, with the Giants, these are the two worst offenses in football. So if the Raiders fans right now are feeling happy and refreshed and renewed, that's good. That's great. You have something to root for. But also keep in mind the two offenses that you just played are quite possibly, along with the Patriots, possibly the worst offenses in football. So we'll see what the Raiders look like when the competition jumps up a notch. But yeah, they have the Dolphins next week. So that will be a true test, and the Chiefs after that. So we'll see where they stand.
I mean, the AFC is truly stupid. There are seven teams. There's that eight teams, you know, between the seven seed, which is Houston. Houston's 5-4. Like, we think of them as this great team, and Cincinnati's 5-4, and Buffalo's 5-4. So they haven't played tomorrow night. But there's seven teams that either have four or five losses, including the Jets, including the Raiders, including the Denver Broncos, at least for one more day.
I'm just like,
eight teams. I counted it wrong. Eight teams have either four or five losses. I mean, that is a big fat middle of a conference, and then New England.
But they, you know, if you're a Jets fan, you're disgusted because you thought home against the Chargers, then you get the Raiders. This would have been your chance to kind of put yourself ahead of a lot of these teams. Instead, now you're kind of looking up at them. It's just very frustrating. And it's, I try to keep it in perspective, Greg, because I know in my heart, as soon as Aaron Rodgers' Achilles popped, it was over. And I said that, I've said that, but they kind of sucked you in with some of those wins and made you think, okay, maybe this could be like a fun, weird season and we're playing in the playoffs as a wild card. But I feel like the last 6 days, reality has struck, and it feels like midnight has struck, which is also kind of sad because it wasn't exactly a Cinderella story either. They've been a tough watch for the most part this season, but we kept on coming up with wins. But now they're coming up with losses, and that's just the way it goes. All right.
Just gotta hold the fort here till Aaron gets back, but at Buffalo and then Miami. The
Knicks just had a really good homestand. They just beat up on all three of their opponents. So we got the Knicks, and we got
big Knicks Celtics game this week. Yeah,
yeah, and the Yankees are
football
down after
is completely different than basketball.
This Thanks, Japanese Mark. Pitcher that I'm excited about, and maybe we make a play for Otani. So there's, you know, there is hope, just not about the football team. All right. We'll be back on Monday with the Monday Night Football recap and news rundown. Also, NFL Plus returns. Our game of the week this week will be
Texans-Bengals.
Pretty good. That'll be fun. So make sure you're there for that. Until then, thank you to everybody for listening, and nice Sunday. Heed the call.
You go into your shower feeling tired, but as soon as you reach for the Irish Spring, your day immediately gets better. That crisp, fresh, unmistakable Irish Spring scent zings your brain and awakens your senses. So when you finally emerge from the shower 37 minutes later because you pay the water bill so you can stay in there as long as you want, you're ready to take on the day and smell great doing it. Irish Spring Body Wash and Bar Soap. Fresh, green, Irish. Shop now at a store near you.
Good sleep should come naturally. And with the new Natural Hybrid mattress, it can. A collaboration between Lisa and West Elm, the Natural Hybrid is expertly crafted from natural latex, natural wool, and certified safe foams to elevate your sleep sanctuary and support a greener tomorrow. Plus, every purchase helps fuel Lisa's work with shelters and those in need. Don't put off a good night's sleep any longer. Get a Lisa mattress today for a sound sleep tonight. Visit lisa.com/iHeart. That's LEESA.com/iHeart.
Managing your diabetes just got easier. The powerful new Dexcom G7 lets you see your glucose numbers on your compatible watch and phone without fingersticks. And because Dexcom G7 is the most accurate CGM system, you can be confident in your food, exercise, and medication decisions. And all those decisions can lead to big results, like more time in range and lower A1C. Get started at Dexcom.com.
Dexcom data on file 2023. If your glucose alerts and readings from the G7 do not match symptoms or expectations, use a blood glucose meter to make diabetes treatment decisions. For a list of compatible devices, visit Dexcom.com/compatibility.